Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership and coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit world. I'm Michelle Malloy-Dillon.
And I'm David Langiuli. Michelle, we have a lovely guest on the podcast this morning. Her name is Susanna Gall, and we both know Susanna well because she's been active in our fundraising leadership community for quite some time. If you don't mind my sharing, Susanna, you're part of a group that Michelle and I are part of, that a group of leaders that from around the world that meets on a monthly basis. And one of the things we did with this group over the course of the past year was go through this PQ training together. Like, we went through the Positive Intelligence book as a group. And so since Susanna has been an amazing contributor to that group of folks, and she happens to be a professor at Penn State Harrisburg campus. She's also an artist, a dancer, a mom, multi-talented, and just a good friend. Welcome to the podcast, Susanna.
Thank you, David and Michelle. It's good to see you and talk together.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is such a great topic. We all had such great experiences going through the Positive Intelligence book together. And it's, yeah, it's wonderful to talk about what we've learned.
Great. And Susanna, you as Emeril Lagasse, I don't know how to quite pronounce his last name, says, you kicked it up a notch in the spring. You actually came into our PQ training program, which is a 7-week intensive. And it was quite a time in your life. You had a lot going on. So why don't you share with the audience what happened and what your experience was like?
Sure. I think the other great point about kicking it up a notch is, you know, the book gives you things to think about and some practice. I think doing the training, the online training program, which you helped to coordinate, David, and fundraising leadership helped to manage, forces you to do it, right? Mm-hmm. Actually do it and practice it and engage in it. And it has a bunch more resources. So it wasn't just, you know, talking about it. There were videos and a bunch of different audios and all kinds of specific exercises and visualizations. So it was, and I think I say this in the blog, you know, reading my post gives you some idea, but actually doing this training program was really, you know, absolutely a shot in the arm and all of the other resources. So it was, I think we started in mid-May. We had just finished the semester of craziness where at Penn State University, we had switched in the middle of the semester right after spring break to completely online because of the COVID-19. Luckily, some of the technology I'd had experience with, but the students were like floundering and trying to keep them engaged. And I'm a really committed educator. And so I wanted to be engaged with the students and work with them, but it was quite a different experience. So that was coming off of that. I just in April just finalized a divorce from my husband of 34 years. And that was emotionally, of course, a lot. And I remember doing PQ reps, these things, as I was going to the house to finish packing up some of my things. And it was extremely helpful to sort of, you know, realize the things that were going on. Because of that divorce, I was moving. I bought a house in that time. And it was a lot of upheaval that would disrupt people. And of course, disrupted me. But I felt that the PQ training program really helped me center and weather those challenges, I think, better than I could have without it.
Yeah, I love the word center and weather, because that's putting it into practice helps me feel the same way, Susanna. It's like that centering, and I can get through it, mm-hmm. right? And Shirzad Shamin's book, Positive Intelligence, is the basis for everything that we've we've been learning, and it's one thing, like you said, to read the book and intellectually understand it. And it's another thing to be going through a really challenging time in life and actually put it into practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll be sure to link to your blog post, which was excellent, Susanna, on the Fundraising Leadership blog site. We'll do that in the show notes if for the audience, in case you haven't read your article, where you sort of outline that time of your life and what you were going through. I mean, those are three, probably among the three most disruptive experiences one could have, a complete disruption in your professional life around how, you know, you've been university professor and administrator for much of your adult life, and all of a sudden you had to figure out a whole new way of teaching and doing what you're here for, which is to help your students, and then having a divorce, going through a divorce, and then moving. I mean,
all within a matter of a couple of months. I mean, it's
Yeah.
So some of the most stressful things that one can.
So I'm curious how the training helped you get through that.
I think it gave me some very practical, very specific activities, things that I could do, things that I could think about, recognizing, so as you know, one of the sort of hallmarks of it is to recognize your saboteurs. And as I say in the blog post, I'm a controller, or that's one of my saboteurs, and a hyperachiever. And as David, you and Michelle and I have discussed in the leadership group, controllers were having a real hard time during the COVID-19 because we couldn't control most of anything. And we're still having issues. And so, you know, recognizing that those are things that sabotage you or make you less effective, less happy first. And then my hyperachiever, and then controller, of course, wants to control when I do things, how it's going to happen. I want to line everything up, and I couldn't, right? Mm-hmm. And so realizing that and challenging that. And then the hyperachiever getting it all done perfectly and everything. And I was finding it was making me unhappy to try and do all of those things. And it helped me to say, yeah, those are not, those aren't good things. They're hurting me. They're making it harder for me to be really truly happy and settled or centered, like we said earlier.
Yeah, the lies of the saboteurs are that they're helping us.
Right.
That they're actually there for a good reason and we need them around.
Well, yeah. And I think it's important to remind folks that, each of these ways we sabotage ourselves comes usually from a good place. So yes, it's good to be organized and have things in good order.
My lists every
year. Yeah. I mean, this is all like this, these are, there's some good in this for sure until that's not possible. Or it's good to achieve things. So the set goals and achieve them. This is, Aristotle said, we are teleological beings. We set goals and we go after them. So there's nothing wrong in achieving. It's just when it gets overachieving, or what we say, hyperachieving, where you drive yourself nuts and everybody else around you, that it sabotages our lives. So go ahead, Susanna.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, I was on the highway driving back from a trip last weekend, and it was a big signpost related to some other things, but it was saying, there are sometimes the battles are within. And that's a battle that I was having within myself. And it was making me really unhappy, and it was making the people around me unhappy.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize how much it was sabotaging my happiness and effectiveness until I had to identify them, enact them, and face them. And again, we had done the saboteur assessment, a year and a half ago. I knew what those were, but the training program made me work on them. right? It's one thing to say, yeah, I want to be, you know, build that muscle or whatever it is. It's another thing to say, okay, I need to do the push-ups to be able to do that kind of thing. So,
what were the challenges for you, Susanna, in facing your saboteurs in the way that you talk about during such a challenging time of your life?
Well, not being able to control everything. I had to, you know, get into the house when my ex-husband, you know, wasn't there, or, you know, we had to negotiate a few of the different things we were separating out. And I couldn't control all of that. I also wanted to have it all done by a certain period of time. And I had to let go of some of my doing everything that first week or whatever after the classes were done.
So what was it like being more aware of that challenger or that controller and that hyperachiever?
I think realizing it and saying, okay, I didn't, you know, some of the comments we've had, you know, name that saboteur Harry or whatever it is. I tried that. It didn't fit me so well, right? Yeah. I just said, yeah, that's the controller or that's the hyperachiever.
Yeah.
My judge is called Sledgehammer. Because that's what he beats me up. That's what he beats me up with. Anyway, I wanted to shift a little bit because this is also part of the training, which, you know, Shirzad really does a lighter touch in the book around these sage powers. And we really dive into the sage powers a bit more in the training program. And I remember, and you mentioned this in the article, you know, there was a point when you were in the midst of all of this life disruption, and I asked you what sage power or what's the sage perspective on all of this. And so maybe in hindsight, you could share a little bit with us, like, what sage powers were you able to access?
Yeah, so again, the five sage powers, let's see if I can remember them. Empathy. I found this wonderful picture. It has you do of visualize yourself as a child. I had got this great picture of me and seeing that, and I still have it coming up whenever I pull up my images. And at the time, of course, people were wearing masks, although not everybody. And so I remember going to a store, and the cashier, who was behind the shield but had put her mask down, and I said, yeah, if I visualize her as a child, she probably is not real happy having to wear a mask. Mm-hmm. And so I could let go of some of that judgment, I think, that controller, and the judge is the other saboteur we haven't mentioned here. So that was good. And then the other one that was really easy for me, and David, you saw this in that week that I decided to buy a house, was my activate. That is a really easy sage power for me to work on. And I had been in an apartment for a couple of months. I had some things that weren't panning out for a real move to another town. And so on Sunday, I decided to look at houses in a neighboring town. And by Thursday, I had an accepted contract. You know, so my activate sage power was like, and that was really fun and easy, I guess, to support and to involve. So in terms of the at least those two sage powers, I think I'm in touch with, I have access to. The other ones, I'm still, you know, the explore some. It's not as strong for me quite yet. Trying to remember the other ones. Navigate.
Innovate.
And innovate.
Yeah. Innovate, I have to look at my list too.
Yeah. Innovate is something I also enjoy a lot.
That's your creative yes. Side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I'm curious about how you grew your, like, empathy for yourself. We talk about this quite a bit in the training program, because for many of us, including myself, we have like a harsh inner critic, or especially for hyperachievers, they can be very tough on themselves. I'm curious about how you're growing your self-empathy or self-compassion power.
I think I'm more relaxed a little bit on my morning schedule. I used to get up at 5:45 every single morning and go for my walk or do my yoga. You know, I had a very sort of strict, and now, I mean, I have a little bit lighter. It doesn't all, I don't have to start as early as I had been doing before. And I can take a little bit more time and give myself a little more space to wake up naturally. I'm actually not, I haven't been using my alarm recently. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm a little too more tired, and so I go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. So that for me has been really nice.
Yeah, I hear that you're giving yourself a little bit of a break, like when you need a little bit of a break, and it's just a it's just enough flexibility that it's not so rigid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and demanding on yourself. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I like what you're saying. I really like what you said about, you know, giving yourself a break and letting yourself sleep. I was practicing that yesterday. I was on a call with Michelle, and it's been a long and challenging week, and I was just exhausted. So I said, I'm going to go take a nap. I need a nap. And boy, yeah, did that help.
Good.
No, that helped a lot. Though the hyperachiever will say, oh, you can't take a nap, that's a waste of time. And then your controller will say, well, you got to get all this stuff done. How can you possibly, you know, take a nap? And then the judge would say, oh, you're not being productive. You can't allow yourself to have a
nap. You don't deserve a nap.
You don't deserve a nap.
You haven't done enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you see all these voices, like, and by the way, yeah, those are kind of all the voices. So what, let's give the audience.
Yeah, I was just going to say one other thing that's a little hard still for me as a professor. I have to discern sort of, you know, good and bad grades, good and bad things. And that I'm still sort of trying to remind myself that judging or grading my students is not the judge in that way. It's a good discernment. I have try and use a rubric, trying to be consistent, and in part because I want to help them learn.
Yeah,
and that's still I'm grappling with, and I hopefully am. And when I talk to my students and grade my students, I'm doing it from a place of positive support, as opposed to you're bad, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, the blameless, we learn when we practice. It's actually a practice called blameless discernment. Like, okay, and in the sciences, this is, I think, as a professor in the sciences, it's a little bit easier to do this. So because you can look at the examinations, you can see the grades, and when they're essays and interpretive responses to questions, I remember my father, who was also a university professor of philosophy, you know, he had the blue books, and he had to assign a grade to these essays. He always struggled with that, you know, because it's not so clear. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although I do have the students do quite a bit of writing in my classes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Yeah. Good, good. They need to learn that too, even in the sciences. Okay. So if you were to give folks who are starting to notice their saboteurs or they're growing in their self-awareness, if you wanted to give them something to try that you took away from the program, what would it be?
I think making some time before meetings, in between meetings, to breathe and really center yourself. We used that term earlier. One of the things that makes it a challenge right now, somebody pointed out to me recently, with all our meetings online, we don't get the 5 minutes or something to walk between buildings or offices that we would usually do to be able to do that. And unfortunately, that time is not wasted. That's usually a centering time. It's also, you know, for me, I love to walk, as you both know, and I miss that, you know, walking between meetings, walking between classes. And so, as much as we can, prepping before a meeting, just centering ourselves, breathing. Some of the exercises involve, you know, just listening for certain sounds and really focusing on where you are in the moment. I still have challenges. My head is going off, you know, planning or revisiting something. But I try and spend, 5 minutes before meetings to really center myself and get myself ready. And so I would absolutely recommend people to do that and again, it doesn't take hours. It doesn't take, closing yourself necessarily off in a closet, although maybe that helps depending on your situation. Just breathing and really focusing on that.
I hear that as giving yourself a gift for a moment to ground yourself, to give yourself just a few moments of some space between each meeting, and that it's something that we intentionally in right now in the circumstances that we're all in with COVID, we intentionally need to do between meetings.
And what about Susanna, what about when you go into the meeting? So you've centered yourself, you've grounded yourself, presumably, or maybe not, and you're in the meeting, and then, or are you with a family member? And you get triggered by an emotion or some irritation or frustration. What would you have the audience try?
Well, I'm still working on this, but mentally, intellectually, I know I need to breathe. And then there's some of the fun exercises you can do without people noticing, wiggling your toes, right? Mm-hmm. So most of the time, in meetings, you're wearing shoes or your feet are under a table and people won't notice if you're wiggling your toes. And one of the exercises is of the PQ training program is to wiggle your toes and really feel all of them. I love that piece. I love, my toes, noticing my toes and really paying attention to all of them. And again, that takes you out of your head, in a sense, and really pulls it away from that part of your body, even more so than some of the other techniques. So I've been trying to remember to do, conversations with people that trigger me or situations where I want to control it. I want to judge it or whatever it is. So that's something else I recommend.
Yeah. I notice as you're saying that, I'm remembering I did that in the when I was sitting in the dentist chair the other day, Susanna. It's like that feeling like of worry, like, oh gosh, what's going to happen? Right. Yeah. And I was wiggling my toes and it was very effective. It really helped sort of just bring me out of my head and also concentrating on what he was doing in my head, to my teeth. It's very effective.
Wiggle the toes is also one of my favorites. It's so rare that we even remember that we have toes. So when you consciously wiggle your toes, as I'm doing right now, it really is has a grounding effect.
I think it's also because of the way, and Shirzad talks about this and it's in the book, but experiencing it is quite different. You're resetting some neural pathways because you've been doing this, the wiggling of the toes and some of this breathing, consciously aware of it. When you redo that in stressful situations, you're reactivating those nerve pathways that you've created and sort of supported as tracks in a sense. And so that helps too.
Yeah, I like what you're saying there, Susanna. As a good biologist, it's always good to bring back in the neuroscience of the foundation of this program is in neuroscience. And for those in the audience, there's a lot of interest these days in neuroscience, even among the general public. And so the good news is that Shirzad cites all of that in the book, and the program is built on a foundation of what we're learning from neuroscience. So it's good to remind folks as a biologist that you concur.
Well, I haven't done the fMRI imaging of my brain yet, but I can easily imagine. And that's why I think the concentrated 7 weeks, weekly focus, daily, bits of this are really necessary. When we were reading this book in our leadership group, we were doing one chapter a month. And that was great because we could handle that with that particular group. But having this, focused, energetic training and support group and a bit of accountability group really made it work absolutely better.
Yeah, well, which really gives the brain that chance to practice and change those grooves like you were talking about, like that period of repetitive practice.
Yeah. And Michelle and I have been through the same training that you went through with us, Susanna, and we were in an accountability pod also. And I will share also, my wife just completed the program.
Yeah, and how did that go?
It went great. She worked on her pleaser and you know, the judge, of course, we all have. And but it's just really, I can share that living in a household where, or if you have friends, you know, having the same experience, people who are working on themselves and growing and learning together is a very special, is very special. And it's special on a relationship. And I just noticed that our relationship just continues to deepen and grow because we have this shared experience. So what if
I was going to say one other thing, I'm doing it again, as I think you both know, I'm doing it again with a different group of people through the CTI support group. And that's going to be really interesting because all of them have, you know, done a lot of coaching in other areas. I've done lots of coaching with individual faculty with some groups. And I've got the experience with this PQ training program. They're coming in and I'm trying to help support them. So it'll be interesting to do it again so soon.
Yeah, after. But now you get to wear your teacher mentor hat, which you do very well. Yeah. Well, if folks, we're going to link to the blog post in the show notes. Folks can find you on LinkedIn. I know that. I just posted today about this topic and tagged you. And I guess, is that the best way to for folks to reach out to you if they had questions about your experiences, through LinkedIn?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I am not a daily or moment to every hour checker of LinkedIn. So okay. I think my email does hook, my Gmail account does hook to that email or that.
Okay, perfect. Site. Perfect. All right. So we'll make sure we link to your LinkedIn profile in the show notes also.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Susanna. Thank you for joining us today. And thank you for the great conversation about all this learning that you've had.
Thank you. It's been good to see you both as well.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, please subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcast, and Spotify. And if you are enjoying the show, please rate and review so others can find us. Now go put it into practice.